Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Hey, I'm J. Michael Michael here, and if you like me, you like and you love talk radio, and like me, you just can't find the right stations for your talk habit on the AM dial, well, how about you tune in to LA Talk Radio? See, LA Talk Radio is a .com and has it all, from sports to politics to religion to, well, just right now we have the beginning writer's very favorite show, The Writer's Block. So sit back, put your feet up, and enjoy it, because it all starts right now.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Bob Brill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Switch it real quick because somebody's going to think they're on the wrong station.
Yeah, we're getting into it.
Oh my God, is that just not the best?
Hey, this is Thursday night. So it's Thursday night. It's LA Talk Radio. And of course, this is The Writer's Block. I am your host, Jim Christina, in the studio tonight with Bob Brill and an amazing guest co-host of Eric Heisner sitting here. Hey, Eric.
And before you go on, I when he was reading the intro, I got to have you hear, say the words, if you like, again.
Uh-huh. If you like.
Oh, God, I sound like John Wayne.
If you like.
It's just like the way he said it the first time. Like, hey, look how his jaw, you know, put the hat back on, Eric.
And, of course, we have our wandering co-host out there in Albuquerque, New Mexico, Bobby Jean.
Hey, Bobby Jean.
I'm here.
Wine girl.
Heisner showed up. He just kind of like wandered into the studio, so we decided to put him to work.
Eric is
one of my favorite people. I got three favorite men in there tonight. Hi, Eric.
Well, look at that.
That's because you can't see us.
sitting in the background waiting with bated breath, I am sure. Bated breath, not breasts.
We're not talking about the book yet.
No, not yet. We're in, or we have our guest tonight, and he is a Calgary Herald best-selling author and vintage leather jacket enthusiast. Now, that's something to be proud of. He is, whose books look at blues, steep devil deals, old-time pulp mixed with Chinese mythology, and the art of storytelling. Jim's mission is to show how the stories we all grew up with, the heroes, the monsters, the adventures, are still solid, muscular realities that shape our lives. So to the writer's block, would you please welcome Mr. Jim Jackson. Hello, Jim. How are you?
Good. How are you?
We're good. You know, it occurred to me as I was reading your book this week, you know, when you look up the word dystopia in Webster's new dictionary, there's a picture of you there. I mean, this is like a
I looked up cockroach and I saw a picture of him there too.
this is like a dystopian noir, a pulp fiction, a Chinese science fiction Philip Marlowe book.
Yeah, it's very cool.
It's got like everything.
Out of a typewriter. Yeah.
Yeah. The only thing he hasn't got in is you bangy women. He's got everything. He's got a cockroach women.
Philip Marlowe was the first thing I thought of.
Yeah, me too.
You know, and I'm going to ask some questions here at some point about Hong Kong and Kowloon side and everything, but we'll get into that a little bit.
Well, we discussed this last night. Oh, Mr. Jackson and I did, and he actually lived in China for a while.
Okay.
So he made it. He made the Kowloon and the Hong Kong trips, and I did when I was in Vietnam. So it's an interesting place to go. And how many cities does it incorporate, Jim?
Oh, you look at least five or six.
Yeah.
I haven't even all of them. Like, I've never been on the south side of Hong Kong Island. I usually spent a little time in central, but I love Kowloon so much, you know? It has that grungy, it's all covered in bamboo scaffolding and neon lights, and that's where I spent most of my time.
Well, I felt like I was there when
I know, huh?
I've never been there, but wow, I could see it and smell it. Yeah.
Kowloon's cool. I went there, oh, golly. Oh, back in, well, it was 88 because I was I took my vacation out of the Seoul Olympics.
How do you remember where you were in 88?
I remember where I were by news events. You forget. I've been doing news for like 47 years. And so I remember where I was by certain news events that took place that I covered. So that's the only way I can do it. Are you kidding?
I don't remember where I was in 1988. I couldn't tell you.
I remember the whole trip. I remember the 25 cents to ride the ferry across the river. And I loved it. It was great. And first time I ever had starfruit.
Oh.
Yeah, first time I ever saw starfruit.
Yeah. Well, it's strictly like an Asian thing.
Yeah, but you could buy it in Albertsons, you know.
Well, now you can. Store.
Yeah,
yeah,
now.
Yeah.
So.
And Bobby Jean, of course, you've never been to Hong Kong.
No, my first encounter was probably in this book.
Well,
I hope I didn't
we encountered.
Quite the
introduction.
No, you made her sick, Jim. You did. You made her sick. You surpassed all my hopes.
The last 40 pages of this book had me on the edge of my seat and kind of I'm cursing you, Jim, at the same time. I had to just turn the page to see what was going to happen next.
It's not exactly a book you want to read when you go to bed at night.
No, no.
No, 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 no.
Especially if you have if you're prone to things crawling on you in the dark.
No.
What is about that?
You know, I just kept thinking about, you know, towards the end of the book when the cockroach queen was standing there and she was trying to stick that little insect tongue down his throat to inseminate him and
the furry thing.
He reached around and grabbed her butt, and he goes, you know, for someone who made out of cockroaches, you got a pretty nice ass.
All the right curves.
So maybe we should start at the beginning. And
Bobby, why don't you start at the beginning?
Well, Bobby, I'm going to give you the lead tonight, so go ahead and ask.
Jim, why don't you tell us, I'm not sure we even got the title of the book out. So we were also anxious to just get going. Why don't you tell us the title of the book? Tell us a little bit about it. And I really want to know, what were you thinking?
That's a great question. So the book is called Kiss of the Cockroach Queen. And it's like old-time pulp meets Chinese mythology. Right, and so it's got, you know, a wisecracking gumshoe hero who happens to be the only person who can deal with all these mythological beasts on the streets of Hong Kong. And it came from, I was in this awful little dive bar in downtown Calgary, waiting for my wife to get off work, and they had, and all the servers just were dressed identical and they looked identical, and there was one that was kind of you know, their leader and was, you know, directing them where to go, and
the
she
mother.
Was like that, but she was like twice their size, and there's some kind of book idea in here and it has to be in some way.
So this is a true story.
So you, because a lot of the action takes place in a bar called the Bird and Bug, I think it is, and yes, and you've got these gals that all kind of look the same. So, you know, I love that you just shared that, because I think as we talk with new writers and we say, well, write about what you know, part of it is you've got to get out. You know, you're going to learn things, not just what you know today. It's what you might know at the end of today when you go to that little seedy bar in town that you've, you know, you've never been into before.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I put that together with a play I saw shortly after that was called Nine Dragons. Giovanni Tsai wrote it. And Nine Dragons is the translation of Kowloon into English, Jiulong. And oh, I've always wanted to set something in Hong Kong. I'm just going to play around with some pulp ideas. Probably nothing will ever happen of this. This is just going to be an experiment and to have a little fun with writing again. And I had so much fun writing it that I have to put this out. This is, if I have fun writing it, people will, you know, have more of a chance to have fun reading it.
You know, Jim, one question I had regarding Hong Kong itself, before and after the mainland takeover, when you're writing this, you're writing before with a thought of what it's like after, or vice versa, or is there any mix in there at all? Because when I was there, I mean, obviously, at that point, it was a very, very seedy place as far as you could find any place to have a seedy relationship.
That's because it was still British.
Yeah. Yeah. And after that, I'm wondering about the changes and how you built that into the book.
That's a fantastic question. And in the book, in the whole series of books, honestly, I dodged the issue as much as possible to just kind of use the setting as a character. But basically, I'm writing it. I didn't have the good fortune to see Hong Kong before 97 and the handover to mainland China. But I was, my first few times there was still before any mainlanders were allowed to go in. So it would have had a similar kind of thing. The government would have been different, but the population would have still been quite similar. So that's kind of where I'm writing from. By the end, I spent 4 years in China. So for the last few times I was in Hong Kong, mainlanders were allowed in. And just because there are so many people in mainland China, as soon as anything happens, then it just changes the vibe. It changes the demographic of places. So great question. In the books, I tend to skirt the issue because I don't want to get into the politics of it. I just kind of want to use Hong Kong as this living, breathing city that's basically a character in the book.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you certainly had your choice of insects. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I was curious. I thought I should start keeping track of how many bottles of hand sanitizer our main character, King Wong, uses in a book. And I wondered if he's going to be, is he going to be meeting more insects in future books, you know, or will there be...
he needs
will
to put
there be other monsters he'll be meeting up with?
Yeah.
Yeah, so second book comes out this spring, and no insects in that one because I kind of had my fill writing about that.
What, he's arachnophobic all of a sudden?
But lots of the hopping zombies, they were a lot of fun to write.
Well, zombies are fun.
Lots of
I mean, you know, I don't know why they never made a movie in Hollywood called Billy the Kid Meets the Zombies. I mean, he met everyone else.
Yeah, regular Frankenstein.
There's a pulp book right there.
There it is. You know, I have to ask you this because the guy's name is King Wong. Now, is King Wong a Chinese guy, or is King Wong
an expat?
An expat
Canadian.
Chinese Canadian.
Ah.
And where's the fedora?
And where's the fedora?
Right.
Okay, well, he's a pulp. I mean, there are rules about these things, right?
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, we've had pulp writers on here before. Actually, Gary Phillips is a pulp writer. He's been on here a couple times.
And as a reader, it sometimes confused me because I would feel like I'm in current time. Uh-huh. You know, it's happening like now.
Right.
But then he's calling he's calling the ladies doll. Yeah. You know? And I'm like, doesn't he know that's really not appropriate in terminology today?
Well,
exactly why he does it.
not for somebody who's an exoteric, and he's the only one in Hong Kong.
Well, hey, there you go. If he's number one, he can only go down.
I don't even know what an exoteric is. Jim, yeah, now tell me, you probably made that word up, didn't you?
I made that word up. I made that word up for the joke. That exoteric with two R's at least.
Yes, yes, yes.
ordinary, but out of this world, kind of exo,
right.
out of enteric world. I made that up just so he had to keep explaining to everyone that he spelled it with two R's.
Well, I'm sure glad that he explained it to me because I had no clue what an exoteric was, but now I know. Now I know. It was an interesting read, and I don't know how long it took you to write this book, but I can almost imagine you sitting there cracking up with each paragraph because some of it was pretty damn funny.
Say this in any kind of, you know, toot my horn bragging way, but there were bits where I was laughing to myself, which I thought was a good sign. You know?
Well, it's always a good sign. You know, it was Robert Ludlum wrote a book about somebody kidnapped the Pope. Uh-huh. And it was a comedy. It was the only comedy book Robert Ludlum ever wrote. And his comments on the inside of the book cover were that there are times he got laughing so hard he couldn't write. So, but I read the book and I couldn't find those funny parts. I don't know where they are.
That's what happens when I try to write horror. It just doesn't come out right.
Well, yeah, no, but you wrote a book about a stripper.
That's true.
That's right.
That's true. I brought you...
There just was not the OR at the end of it, so it was just a horror. Never mind. It's a bad joke. Anyway.
I tend to get that when I write about sex, I start to laughing so hard.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Anything erotic just turns out to be a joke.
Well, you know, and then we all read it and we all get red-faced and, you know, it just goes, wow.
And then it gets banned in some country and you make a lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah, as long as it gets banned, right. You're in good shape. Look at Tropic of Cancer.
I'm curious exactly. about what Eric might be thinking about.
He's
Eric
not.
Has written some great adventure novels, and his new one taking place is Wings of the Pirate.
Wings of the Pirate,
Eric,
yes.
Do you have some questions or some comments you'd like to throw in there as an author and a reader?
Yeah, as reading it, I wasn't sure what time period because I'm not real familiar with the politics of Hong Kong. So I liked it that it was kind of a general backdrop, real seedy. It felt like, you know, to me it almost felt like San Francisco with Sam Spade and stuff mm-hmm. running around. And it's not, you know, I like the pulp stuff, but, you know, when the cockroach and the queen in the title, I thought, what is this going to be? But yeah, I got into it. He's a snarky character, and he calls everyone doll just to kind of irritate him, and he rubs people the wrong way, and the way he describes his clients.
Yes.
She's so expensive in all the right ways and all that, so it's I liked his attitude.
Well, it definitely was noir.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. I mean, yeah. Absolutely.
And it's just the sweat, the grime, you know, he's pushing his hat back. You know, that's the kind of stuff I like. That's the kind of stuff that drives my wife nuts. You know, I wrote a Western, and my wife said, if he touches his mustache one more time, I'm throwing the book across the room. You know?
Yeah.
But, you know, I like it. You know, when he's touching his hat, I'm like, yeah, I can familiarize with that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a hat guy. That's cool.
Guys with mustaches, you automatically go there and kind of get them out of your mouth.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, you can't eat soup.
I mean. Well, yeah, I know. It's a good filter, but, you know.
Hey, Jim, Jim brought up something else that I was going to bring up, and that was film noir. Are you a big fan, or were you a big fan growing up of that, and that translates to what you're doing now, or no?
Absolutely. Yeah, I remember when I was, I don't know, like 19 or 20 or something, I think I watched every Bogart movie, and I started making a mannerism out of that. But you know that thing Bogart does with his top lip where he kind of curls his top lip under on top of his teeth?
Yes.
So I just called everybody sweethearts, and which I'm sure was really annoying for people from a 20-year-old in the late 90s.
Well, I'm sure. Well, you know, a funny thing about Bogart, he did that to keep his false teeth in place.
You just told him.
No, I don't think I remember that. Right.
Yeah, that's why he did it. They asked him about that once. They said, why do you do that? He goes, it keeps my teeth in place.
Jeez, I just heard a story about Bogart yesterday. That he was such a small guy, they brought him down the dumbwaiter sometime when he was later and kind of feeble.
Yeah.
Like, oh,
yeah.
So many actors in that era, you had Alan Ladd and all these other guys are real short.
They had to put them on like boxes because all their female leads were taller than they were.
Yeah. Or I shoot them from up from the top of the hill down.
Yeah.
You know,
okay.
I mean, but hey, Tom Cruise can make a lot of money doing movies, and he's still short. So.
Yeah.
Well, he's never going to get tall, so he's always going to be short.
Once he starts curling his lip under, I don't know. He's
yeah, I know, huh? Except he doesn't have to hold his false teeth. Well, we don't know. All right, Bobby Jean, I'm not forgetting you, so ask your questions. I know you got a list.
Oh, I wondered, you make references to both the other kind and the underkind. And I wasn't sure what the difference was.
Well, in the whole mythology, that's a great question, in the whole mythology of the universe, so other kind are any of the mythological creatures, like all the dragons, the gods, the monsters from whatever mythology. And then there are different subsets in there. So there's mountain kind, there's desert kind, and those are, you know, your mythological creatures from mountains or deserts. And then I threw in underkind for the cockroaches, which actually have, although I went full on pulp with it, but there is actually a precedent for that in Chinese mythology called gu insects. These insects that have been transformed by this kind of super poison into these horrible monsters. So other kind or underkind is a subset of other kind that's the uglier, the more cockroachy, detritivore, garbage eater kind of thing.
Wow.
Okay. Uh-huh. That helps.
Detritivore, garbage eater. Yeah. I like it. I like it.
I obviously haven't read a lot of books in this realm.
Well, actually, we're not quite sure what the genre is. So you want to enlighten us, Jim?
I call it pulp mythology.
Okay.
There you go.
Right, it's mythology and kind of makes kind of cheesy adventure stories out of it.
Well, you made it.
Yeah. And the cheesier the better.
Now, when you sit down to write, when did you write? When did you? I mean, you're obviously you still have your day job, so I mean, when do you find time to write? What's your schedule like?
This was actually something my wife suggested. So I was trying to schedule in half an hour here and an hour here in the week to write, and she said, why don't you just do it first thing when you get up before you start all your client work, and just do that, just write for however long. I'll give it a try. So I did that, got up before anyone else in the house was up, and it was quiet, turned on my computer, had a cup of tea, and wrote for an hour. And for me, an hour is 1,000 words. No matter if I think I'm going really fast or if I'm struggling with every word, at the end of an hour, it's usually pretty much 1,000 words.
Really?
So, and yeah.
For me, an hour is like a paragraph.
But it's good.
But it's a good paragraph. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
That works really, I've just been doing that first thing in the morning.
Yeah. How long have you been doing
before
that?
Before you kind of get frustrated with the everyday stuff of the day and just hammer it out, and then I feel good for the rest of the day, you know?
Yeah, you feel like you accomplished something.
Yeah.
Something that's important to you. Yeah. How long you've been doing it that way on that kind of schedule?
That way, just over a year.
Okay.
You mentioned
between the first book I did with that method, and so it took me a little more than a month.
You mentioned your other client work. Well, what's your day job?
I write training materials for companies.
I thought he was going to be an exterminator.
Yeah. Yeah, I work for Hydrex.
Yeah, you write training materials for companies like that now.
Absolutely grilling him about cockroaches and did you ever see any up here? Because we're pretty far north, and how do they breed? So yeah, he was part of the research for it. I should have put him in a thanks page or something.
Yeah, or do it like I do, just put him in the book someplace, kill him off,
Right.
Why not? That's what you do, Bob. It's what you do, Eric.
Drop them in, take them out, put them in, you know. It's like that Rawhide. It's like the song from Rawhide. Put them in, take them out, put them in, take them out, you know.
Well, like Richard Polinelli when we did that book, The Last Lonely Trail. We put all of Richard's friends in there. We killed them all off.
Well, that way you don't have to deal with them again.
Well, yeah, I know.
Especially if they owe you money.
It's cool.
Yeah. It's the cheapest way to get rid of somebody that you don't like.
Yeah, just kill them off.
So Jim, can I change topic for just a second?
Absolutely
when,
not.
When I was reading on your website, I understand that you are not only do you collect vintage jackets, and that fascinates me, but you also really find music to be an important ingredient for you. And I'd love you to talk a little bit about that, about music and you.
Sure. Yeah, that's fantastic. Music is actually how I originally got into writing. I originally started writing so that I could write songs when I was 15. I got an acoustic guitar at a pawn shop and just started writing songs before I could even play the thing. I thought I was like doing like little playing on one string or something and thinking I was really cool and writing these songs. They were terrible. But
and they all sounded like Bogart.
Yeah. So throughout my teens, I was writing songs first.
And you think you're Paul McCartney. I'm sorry, go ahead. I warned you the other night we do that.
Do you listen to music while you write? Or do you have it quiet?
While I write, yeah. No.
Okay.
But while I'm plotting, yes. I'll make like playlists for characters or just kind of a theme thing. Like my book before this, I call a novel in blues because it uses all these very blues tropes like crossroads, deals with the devil, things like that. Mm. And so I listen to a lot of Delta blues to get in the mood to write and then silence and hammer it out.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good idea. Delta blues are good.
Yeah, just kind of gets the brain spinning and get ideas going.
Hey, we're gonna stick you on hold for just a second. We're going to do some commercials.
Yeah.
Well, what's that? Holy crap! All right, Bobby, we're going to kick off with you tonight. You want to go ahead and tell them what they're supposed to be thinking?
This is the time of year we reach for a warm, cozy blanket, a blanket that gets better with time. And Out West is your source for the Cadillac of blankets, the Denali Collection. Softer and warmer than fleece, these unique blankets are made from an innovative fabric called microplush. For yourself or for a gift, Denali has patterns and designs for any home decor style. You provide the fire, the book, and your favorite hot beverage, and Out West provides the blanket. Come on over to outwestshop.com to find the perfect cozy throw for everyone on your list. Use coupon code GIFT, that's capital G-I-F-T, and save $10 off your order of $50 or more. You can talk to us directly, toll-free, at 1-877-340-9378. And it's always a great day out west.
You know, I mentioned this a couple of times, actually about three or four times now on the show. And if you're looking for a good burger, and Bob, I know you haven't been there yet.
No, I haven't.
But they're all over the country, and they're springing up like hotcakes. And I don't know if they got them in Austin, but I think they do. Eric, they're called Smash Burger.
No,
you'll find them at some of the airports. Have got them, but they're like really cool burger places. I mean, it's like there's big signs on their walls says we ball our meat, then we smash our balls. I mean, come on. It's all good, but everything is fresh. Everything comes out of there right there when you order it. Nothing's under a light or a lamp to keep warm. It's all made fresh, and they bring your food to your table, and the French fries are still sizzling. That's how fresh their food is, and they're all over the place. The one I happen to go to is in Simi Valley, and it's right in the corner of LA Avenue and First. And it's right across from the Shell station. So if you're in Simi Valley, if you're in California and you happen to be in Simi Valley, stop in and visit the Smash Burger. And I think you have one over down by you.
Really?
Yeah. You may want to check it out.
I was going to say you can't blame me for not going to.
I was going to say you can't blame me for going not going to Simi Valley lately, but
no, I mean no, it's because it's been on fire.
Yeah.
But they moved one. They put one over by me.
I think there is one. If you go on their website, which is smashburger.com.
Okay, I'll check it out.
I don't know if they have any up in Canada, Jim, but if they do, you really ought to try one out. Or if you come down to the States.
Yeah, Smash Burger A.
Yeah, A?
I think it might have been a Smash Burger in a casino in Macau.
Really?
Wow. Okay. Yes, but we're not real sure what the meat was, huh?
And it's gray.
And it's gray.
No, seriously. Yep. You know, the casino in Macau was the only casino on the entire island that had a craps table back in.
Is that right?
Yeah, I played it. Because for some reason, the Chinese population didn't take the craps. You know, they play all the crazy games, and of course, blackjack, where people are betting on your hand for you and things like that. But and then they took it away, and I don't know since when, and all the other companies have gone back there, if they've added a craps table.
Well, I wasn't in Hong Kong to gamble. I was in R&R.
I was there. I was in Macau.
I was a little busy.
Yeah, I guess you were.
Yeah. Okay.
And we're proud of you for doing that.
Thank you. Thanks for your service. Yeah. Okay. You're leaving on vacation and tickets have been purchased. Hotel reservations are confirmed. Mail delivery has been suspended, but what about the dog? Well, all dogs rule day camp and sleepovers. It's the place your dog wants to be when they can't be with you. All Dogs Rules provides your best four-legged friend a place to run and play outside amongst orange trees and grass in a country-like setting. So your dog gets to be, your dog gets to be a dog. All Dogs Rule offer additional services, including individualized playtime, personal walks, swimming sessions in the creek, and training. So go visit All Dogs Rule on the web at alldogsrule.com or give them a call, 805-524-1100. And I'm sure Russ and Karen will appreciate it, as we do, because my dog was there, and Bob, your dog was there.
Hey, what can you say? They all like it.
It's like they love it there. Yeah. They get to run around in a serene country-like setting and be dogs.
And act like people.
So when your pup comes home with that smile on his face, you know whose vacation was better, yours or the dog's?
Yes, sir.
Yes, well, it was the dog. So 805-524-1100, All Dogs Rule in Fillmore, California. Okay, it is now 7:31. And it is. We are on the phone with our guest tonight, Mr. Jim Jackson, up in Calgary, Alberta, Canada.
How you doing?
And we're talking about his book and his process. His book is Kiss of the Cockroach Queen. And it's a whopper. And I don't really give you any more of it because there's so many surprises in this book. It is unreal.
That's fun. Yeah,
it's a lot of fun. Suffice it to say that Mr. Jackson has a really sick mind.
I will never look at a cockroach.
And he puts it down
again.
On paper very well.
You're right what you know, right?
That's it. So let's talk a little bit about your process, Jim. You've been writing for how long?
In total, 20, not 20 years. Yeah, more than 20 years, 25 years.
Really?
Seriously, for publication, about four years.
Okay.
I really got back into it after a long hiatus.
Okay. So if you want to call and talk to Jim tonight, this number in the studio here is 818-602-4929. Again, that number is 818-602-4929. Well, I'm going to jump right to the question. What do you think, Bobby Jean?
Sure.
All righty then. Are you on your microphone?
I am on my microphone. I had just I was reading some pages I had.
No, here. You know
no,
what she's
you
doing.
Wine and
that's right. It's either coffee and Bailey's or wine.
What away from the microphone? Now I'm right here.
Well, this name of the show, Jim, is The Writer's Block. And there's a reason it's called a writer's block. Have you ever had writer's block? If you have, how did you get out of it? And if you haven't, how did you avoid it?
Right. That's a great question. So I would define writer's block as not being happy with what I write, because I'm kind of a stickler. I make sure if I'm sitting down to write, I write something. I'll sit down for my hour. I'll put out 1,000 or so words. and they might be terrible. So I would say writer's block is when they're always terrible for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and in that definition, I've absolutely had it. So what I did was just push on,
uh-huh.
Right? I'm also a stubborn old goat. That wasn't the first word that came to my mind.
Well, I was going
to
say fart, but
goat. It is internet radio, so.
Yeah, we're on radio. I don't know.
What well, you can say what you radio. Want. This is special radio.
So, yeah. So, I mean, I take a lot of solace from Somerset. Mom was asked, like, do you write on a schedule or do you wait for inspiration to strike? And he said, oh, I always wait for inspiration to strike, and it strikes between 9 and 5 Monday to Friday.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
Like if you sit down and put out some words, you'll get something. And yeah, you might have to edit them pretty severely later, but uh-huh. You might not. It might just come through you. Like one of my favorite books about this is James Scott Bell. No. That's not the author I'm thinking about. He's good too. Stephen Pressfield, War of Art. That the muse loves a working stiff, right? Like if you want to be inspired, sit down and do your part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Put in whatever time you're putting in every day to write,
mm-hmm.
and the muse will come. They'll do their part too.
Mm-hmm. We had a guest on. Golly, I want to say maybe a month ago, or maybe a little longer. I know Bobby Jean. I remember you made a comment about her idea of about when she writes. It was, I believe her comment was write drunk, edit sober.
Oh, right. Yes, I remember
edit sober.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great way that's better. A great idea. I'm sorry.
But yeah, you want to keep that in that order. You don't want to reverse
it. No, you don't want to reverse it.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I made it a habit of not editing my own stuff because, I mean, if I missed it the first time, I damn sure are going to miss it the second time and probably the third.
I'll never catch the other there.
Yeah. Me either. Me either.
It's always there.
Or the, T-E-H.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, at least, you know, in today's world, at least you have spell check or whatever program you're using, if you're writing a word or whatever, that will correct a lot of those things. But the worst one is the words that are the same word,
right?
You know, in the English language,
there,
and where, and things like that.
Right.
You know, you don't catch.
No.
And you have to have a separate editor to catch that. Because no matter, I always find that I can write it and read it on my computer 15 different times. And the first time I print that sucker out and I go through with a red pencil and I get it all read up.
Just
a different view.
Yeah, it's. Yeah. I mean, you know, you're looking at it with a different eye as well.
Yeah.
A sober one.
Yeah.
Hopefully,
preferably.
Jim, do you work with an outline, or do you just you had, for instance, for this book, did you know when you sat down how it would end, or did you have the ending first, or just kind of how did it put itself together?
Another great question. I had an outline for the arc of it, so that the first quarter was kind of deciding, the main character deciding whether he was going to act or not. And then the second two quarters were the action itself, and the last quarter, the consequences of that action. There were a lot of times where I kind of wrote myself into a corner and thought, I don't know. I even don't know how he's going to get out of this. I better keep writing so I can figure it, so I can find out.
That's the time to go take a nap. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Forget the 1,000 words. You're hours up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you have a favorite? I mean, we all identified with Philip Marlowe, and at least two of us did. I think, Jim, you mentioned Sam Spade, or maybe Eric did.
Well, I think it was it's six of one, half does the other.
Yeah, same guy. And
Mike Hammer.
Yeah, and I'm kind of wondering, did you have a favorite of those guys or of that genre growing up that you kind of hung on to, and maybe some of that filters into your writing and into your character development?
Oh, growing up... I wanted to like Chandler a lot more than I actually did, but I just found The Big Sleep just so meandering and confusing that I couldn't get a handle on it. So I really liked Dashiell Hammett a lot more for that reason. Mm-hmm. Film versions, it's not the same, but book versions, I really went with Dashiell Hammett for this. My model was, and I have no idea how famous this writer was. I was at a secondhand store, like 5 years ago or something, and saw these pulp novels by Carter Brown. There were a couple of them, and they were 25 cents. So I thought, well, I'll just get them. I mean, how bad can they be? They have excellent covers, and. So I was reading these, and I'm looking at them, and like with the trim size and with the thickness of them, like, this can't be more than 25,000 words, and this tells me a full story. So that was actually kind of my model for this, that aim for 30,000 words, tell a short, fast story, and keep everyone on the edges of their seats as best as my talent allows.
Yeah, just pure entertainment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Have you thought about movies or anything like that? If you were to do this if it was a movie, how would you cast it?
Oh my God!
I have thought about that.
Does that?
I had kind of Don Cho in my head for the lead.
Who?
Don Cho. He was Sulu in that in the new Star Trek.
Oh yeah.
Didn't he do like a stoner burger movie or something like that?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. How about the Cockroach Queen?
Her, I don't know. I've never seen anybody. I have a vision of her in my head. Well, actually, based on that. That head waitress from the bar.
Whole lot of CGI, I think.
Yeah. It's an interesting concept. I wonder if you're going to be able to. I don't know about how the second book is coming, or if you've pretty much got it finished. Is the tempo and the feel of the second book as good as this one? Do you think?
Do I think?
That's
a hard. I have to be honest with myself if I'm asking that. If answering that, you know what? Writing it, I didn't find it, and I actually took a break writing the second one to write something else, and then went.
Okay.
Read it to get it ready for beta readers. Mm-hmm. I thought, this is actually better than I thought it was, and only read one of my beta readers. Feedback. So I have more to read, but so far it looks pretty good. And pacing was one of the things that that this one that I've read mentioned that that it just clips along.
Hmm. Well, because the Kiss of the Cockroach Queen, it's yeah. I don't know how you top it.
Yeah.
But then I think probably Ian Fleming thought the same thing about Casino Royale.
Yeah.
You know, how do you top it? And he did, continually.
Oh, it's Chitty Chitty Bang Bang?
Yeah, and that is kind of the model.
It's Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Open-ended series will go until people don't want to see them anymore, or I get tired of writing them, which won't be anytime soon because they're a lot of fun. Yeah.
How many books do you plan on putting in this series?
So far, I have three. I'm about a third done the third one. Mm-hmm. So first one's out, first one Kiss of the Cockroach Queen, that's out. Second one, Bones by Breakfast, that I need to do a final edit on, and that'll be out in the spring. And then there's one that I'm a third of the way through writing called Guru Girl Gambit.
Hmm. Okay.
Cool.
Are you planning on putting a theme in all your titles, or no?
So far, it's been very much alliteration, and past that, that's kind of the hook.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes sense. Makes sense.
Jim, do you work with a literary agent or a publicist, or how do you get the word out about your books? A little tip on marketing, maybe, for our listeners.
Absolutely. Yes, I do have a publicist. I've had a couple as we've gone along, and so things like this are fantastic, and I just love talking to people about this kind of thing, especially other writers. Biggest thing for me, though, is community, right? Like, I have a good friend. You actually had on the show, Tony Phillips, who used to be...
Tony's been on this.
Yeah, a book buyer for, I don't know, some department store or something. And he always says, like, fiction sells locally first, and then kind of radiates out from that. And that's what I found. Like, being part of the local writers community has done more than I could have ever imagined it could have.
Hmm. Okay.
So here in Calgary, there's an indie bookstore that once a month has an open mic for writers. Last Wednesday every month. There was one last night, actually. And that's where I've gotten to know so many people. I do all of my book launches there, and you build community, and the people in that community have other tribes and connections that they talk to you about, and I haven't found anything better than that.
Hmm.
Okay. I think we've had some other authors on that are connected to that same bookstore.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We've had, well, almost all of them from Canada that are from that area have been in there or know of it. Yeah. Yeah.
Sounds like a wonderful, wonderful bookstore. Boy, we really have to thank our independent bookstore owners and even the few chains that are left, since there's not a lot, you know.
No.
go support your local books. Whatever the bookstore is locally, go support it.
There you go.
You know, keep them open.
There you go. Well, Jim, I hate to pull your plug, pal, but we're out of time, and it's been a hoot having you. So
happy to be on. Fantastic. This is exciting.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it, and we enjoyed having you. And make sure that you get a hold of Jerry when the new books come out. And we're booked up through May of next year, and she's not booking anybody right now. We put a kibosh on anything until probably the end of February, first part of March. So giving her a break and trying to work down off the list we've already got. So, but anyway, keep in touch with her. And if you want to let our audience and our listeners know where they can find you, your email address, your website.
Yeah, absolutely. Website is simple, reallygoodstory.com. And that'll have everything about the books, a little bit about me. I think there's some embarrassing photos up there that you can check out. Twitter is at JacksonTron, and Facebook is JimJackson.author.
Excellent. Well, we thank you for joining us, and we truly do. And again, great book. And if you're interested in it, it's called The Kiss of the Cockroach Queen. You can find it on Amazon and any of the online booksellers. So, Jim, thanks again for joining us, and take care, my friend. Have a good holiday season.
Thank you, Jim, and everybody else. Thanks.
You betcha. Take care. And it was Jim Jackson and Kiss of the Cockroach Queen.
And remember, when you kill a cockroach, if you kill it with a chemical, you can't. It doesn't kill the next generation.
Exactly.
Which is that true?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We learned a lot.
I love the line, though, when at the end of the book, when the cockroaches come out from under the wall and he's out of spray.
He's like, I don't care.
He goes, well, this time the shoe's going to have to work. Well, Eric, thanks for coming in.
I like the line, let's get it on, bug style.
There you go. Well, Eric, thanks for coming and joining us.
Well, thanks for having
me. Cool, oh, it was kind of cool having you.
I can't believe how fast the time goes in here. It's just
I know. It's you're in here and it's done. Yeah. You know, we're done.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Primarily.
Yeah.
But you're going to be back in Austin next week, right?
I will be, yeah. I'm heading back there tomorrow.
Johnny D. Boggs is going to be on with us next week.
Ah, cool.
A.K.A. Stephen King.
Did you have that kid walk up to him at the...
I know. That kid was so surprised. I gave him $10 to go ask him if he was Stephen King. I think his mother thought I was insane.
What book does Johnny have coming out?
He's got a new one. It's called Soldier. Bob's got it right here.
It's Tom Soldier.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Bobby Jean, you're not with us for the entire month of December.
I know. I have conflicts every Thursday night. So happy, Merry Christmas and
well,
Happy New Year.
To you as well. And just remember, you were here first. So
yes,
conflicts can wait. You were here first.
Well, yes, I realize that. But I can't clone myself.
Yeah, okay.
Busy.
Anyway.
Well, if you read this book, maybe you can.
But anyway, Eric's new book, Wings of the Pirate.
Yeah, that came out. That's kind of, like Bobby Jean, you said, that's kind of a pulp adventure.
Yeah.
You know, 1950s.
I
love
really
the cover.
Liked it.
Cover's great.
The cover is great.
Did Al do the cover?
No, a friend of mine that I grew up with, he does a lot of photography and photo manipulation.
Gotcha.
He did that.
And I got to tell you, I love Grumman and Goose. They're just great airplanes.
That's so cool.
It's like a SA-60 Junior.
Yeah. Well, actually, the plane that's on the cover, there's a guy up in Washington, and they just restored that.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. So I contacted them and said, hey, do you have any great pictures of it? And he sent me some pictures, and I thought, I can only put one on the cover, but there's like a dozen great pictures. They just look so cool.
Well, like I said, next week we have Johnny D. Boggs. We'll be talking to him over in your part of the country there, Bobby Jean, in New Mexico. And of course, we will have to rub his nose in his Stephen King fiasco.
We're gonna have to go over and explain that to everybody.
Well, we did. Yeah. But we'll explain it, and then we'll let Johnny tell his side of the story.
Well, you can just show the video, right?
Well, we do have the video.
Well, we'll just show it on radio.
Actually, we
can do that because we have the thing.
Yeah. Or not YouTube.
Okay. Well, we are totally out of time. Thank you all for listening. And Bobby Jean, have a great December, and we'll miss you, and Merry Christmas to you, and Happy New Year.
We'll see you in January.
Yes, ma'am, you will. And Eric, thanks again for joining us.
Thanks, ma'am.
And for Bob Brill, myself, Jim Christina, and Bobby Jean Bell, we, of course, are out of here. Whoops.